Maryland?
Yeah.
You throwing in some butthole in there?
No, that's the recording studio in Austin. Yeah. Yeah, no.
All right, very well.
There's Studio A and Studio Pepper.
Things have definitely become much more do-it-yourself and decentralized as far as... I mean, that's why when Lars Ulrich was decrying the end of the record label with the creation of Napster in the early part of this millennium, we were like, shut up, Lars. Nobody cares. Everyone knows that the music industry is a shallow money trench where pimps and thieves, you know, run around free and good men die like dogs.
And there's a bad side.
Yeah, and that's, you know... That's just part of it.
But no, but yeah, it's like, it definitely made a lot of sense because it's just like, you know, back then that the old rock and roll mentality, it was what it was, is it was a breeding ground for, you know, worthless drug addicts. You know, you just end up getting carted around in a limo all day doing drugs. You don't have to worry about anything except showing up and someone hands you a Les Paul that you're just going to play rhythm on. You know, it's a different world now. Now it's, people set up their own stuff. They drive their own. People aren't on tour buses anymore. The only people who are on tour buses are.
You do realize it's a minute after one right here on 90.1 FM.
KKFI. I didn't realize that.
90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. But, I mean, people have always been riding around in, you know, Ford Econoline vans that say have a bumper sticker on the back that says
"Where
is Walt?"
They always have, but now like headliners don't. You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. The only guy that can fill Sandstone is John Mayer, and he has to sell Groupons to do it. I mean, that's the most depressing thing in the world to me. Thinking about that, all the, you know, fond memories I have of being out at Sandstone as a kid to go see shows, and then it being reduced to, you know, John Mayer playing for the mid-30s, you know, Mission, Kansas crowd singing to a bunch of, you know, ladies in knockoff yoga pants.
Well, don't forget My Morning Jacket.
Things have just changed.
Things have changed.
And things have become, and, you know, I mean, they just had the middle of the map fest in Kansas City, which is a cool thing.
250 bands.
I mean, it's like a South by Southwest, but it's the middle of the map by MapQuest, MapQuest or something.
Yeah, it's Map by MapQuest.
Yeah, that's what it is. And that's totally cool that you can have something like that.
Because, and you went to something a few weeks ago that was similar.
Yeah, no, the Folk Alliance had. You know, I mean, there's a lot of that going on. But the difference is I think there's something to be said about society when everyone's just kind of tapping their foot and nodding their head to the same songs, and when those songs are really good. There's like a zeitgeist about that. There's like a spirit about that that's pretty powerful. When everyone's just, you know, humming the same, you know, mindless Cyrus song in their head.
Well, one theory I have about that is that
I think it cheapens things a little
bit. In the old days, you know, I'm no scientist or doctor, but it seems to me that I was just talking to someone about this, how in the old days, even just, you know, 20 years ago or whatever, when you needed to tell someone something, you didn't just call them or text them right there. Sometimes, you know, some people I know, you even write it down. Be like, oh, yeah, when I talk to this person, I got to tell them this, I got to tell them that. Or you'd sit, you know, by the radio with a cassette deck, you know, cassette tape in, hoping that they played that song that you wanted, that you could record and then have it, and then you could listen to it, you know, every day, and, you know, that you could, you know, we didn't have, like, all this. What I'm saying is the endorphins, you know, in your brain would be released by, you know, live music and this stuff that would happen, and, like, when something would happen, it was so special, whereas now everything is so on demand that it's like we're constantly, like, just, like, you know, getting endorphed. It's just like there's no, like, it's not like you wait for that grand moment, because it's just like you could just skip, you know, wait 5 seconds to skip this and whatever. And like,
what's up, bro? How you doing? I'm totally endorphed, man.
Dude, and it's like, you know, everyone's on Adderall and everyone's on antidepressants and everybody's on, you know.
Don't forget about Monster energy drinks.
Monster energy drinks and, you know, Mountain Dew and all this other stuff. And
is that where's that?
Did you say Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew, is that in the Golden Heights?
No, they sell it in Philly.
Oh, okay. All right, somebody's on the phone. We could...
It's made from the dew of Mount Zion.
If somebody was on the phone, they gave up, though. We're sorry about you giving up. 816-931-5534.
Take another 931 sip of your Monster. Call back.
But no, but you know what I'm saying, though, how, like, you know, it's not as special anymore now. It's just like, you know, even like porn is on demand. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it, like everything's on demand now. It's just like you just get it when you want it.
It's a funny thing.
It's good for some things.
Because I'm like, I got these records. You know, I bought some, you know, rare records off of eBay or whatever, because it, sometimes it's just easier to do that. And I'm smelling them because, you know, I get them. Open up the box and you just kind of like,
they don't smell right.
No, you get like a whiff of them. You're like, oh man, it has that musty kind of trunk full of like Hustler smell to them.
Mm-hmm.
As my wife pointed out, it's like they were Frank Zappa records. She's like, it probably was in the guy's trunk full of Hustlers because people that like Zappa are creeps.
Hopefully,
like, well, you know.
I mean, she's right.
Yeah, no, she's totally right. But I just like to point out that she shares the bed with a pretty big creep, so.
Yeah.
Well, Jesse, I used to look forward all day to the top 8 at 8 when I could dub them onto a tape deck.
Yeah.
The hot 8 at 8? You used to listen to 103 Jams?
Did you used to make cassette suicides?
Oh, yeah. I timed out with a counter and everything. 104.3 used to have the top 8 at 8, I think. Didn't they? Back in the day?
Q104? Huh. I always think of that. There's the hot 8 at 8, and that's, I think KPRS still does that.
Possibly.
None of them are actually hot, though. Which is the.
But I did look forward to them because they weren't on demand.
No, the random nature of listening to radio, which KKFI still provides. I mean, there's
sure.
There's very much so that. Where you're not choosing the music. It's not, you know, a shuffle off of your iPod.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so. I don't know. Everything's so fast now, and I just feel like, you know.
You're just trying to catch up.
Even, I mean, you remember, you know, not to keep beating a dead horse, but like, okay, so when we were at Adams for Peace, I mean, for a guy like me, that it was just such a powerful thing to see those five guys just standing there doing that, and it was like there's people around us that's like, we need to pick up their phone. Like, did I turn the oven off? It's just like, I can't believe how many people are on their phones. And first off, it's like, I heard a thing they were talking on NPR the other day about the whole debate with the planes, how some airlines are going to be like, yeah, you can talk on the air. And some people were saying how like, well, you know, well, with cigarettes, you know, it used to be when someone smoked in the cabin, basically everybody smoked. That's how it's going to be with phones because, you know, just because you choose to not talk on your phone, if you're on a 4-hour flight and the guy next to you is having a fight with his wife on the phone, like you're gonna have to listen to that or whatever. And one of the guys that was advocating phones on airplanes was saying, well, you know, there's no way around it that like we are all dependent on our phones. Like we need our phones for everything. Our whole life, the guy actually said this word for word, like our whole life is in our phone nowadays. And I feel like, you know, back up for a minute, like that might be part of the problem. And what I was saying about the Adams for Peace thing, I'm saying they're watching those five guys,
or part of the solution.
And I'm like, I can't believe
the final solution,
because you know how much we spent on those tickets. They weren't cheap. And you're just looking around at everybody and you're like, wow, you're finally here. Is this just like what you do on Wednesday nights? Is this just like if you weren't here, you'd be at the other concert? Like, I couldn't believe like how many people like, wow, you spent this money and you're going to go home later and watch the show on your little screen because you filmed it. You were so worried about recording it the whole time. Like, I don't even think you were
and
there.
And that's why like a guy like Prince, you know, the artist that was formerly known as Prince and is now currently known as Prince, is right on for, he just, you get your ass kicked out. If he sees, or one of his security sees, somebody using a phone.
He sticks the blouses on you?
Yeah, absolutely. The blouses come and they push you on out. I mean, that's the rule when you go to a Prince show. He's like, I don't want people on their phones.
That's
great. I don't want people distracting me. Because I was watching Louis C.K., you know, who is okay as far as a stand-up is concerned. I don't, people really love that guy. But he was talking about, hey, don't update your Facebook page and tweet during my show, because I look out and it's, you know, a sea of black and I can't see anyone's face except for the one guy sitting there, you know, with his stupid face tweeting away, because it illuminates you when you're using your smartphone.
It's like when you'd hold the flashlight up to tell a campfire story.
Exactly. You get that one guy, you know, tweeting about, are you here? Yeah, I'm here. This is great. I'm sitting next to you, man.
What do you want to do after this?
But, it, you know, I mean, there's truth about all those things. But cell phones aren't necessarily the problem. They're more like the solution. The solution was, you remember when back when conspiracy theories still were rampant and persistent through our society, and everyone was concerned about, you know, George Bush not leaving office and declaring himself a dictator through, you know, Dick Cheney, something like that, all the concerns there, and everyone was just freaked out, and the we're going to be chipped, and the Bible says that we're going to have the mark of the beast. And
we have the mark of the beast.
Yeah, it's a cell phone. They, people got chipped.
Yeah.
They did it completely voluntary. Mm-hmm. And now it's to the point where you see somebody, and if they lose their phone, and it's property, it's got information on it, it's like losing your wallet now. I mean, I get it. It's a concern. Right, whatever. But not leaving the house with it. You have to turn around and go get it. You need to have it. People have these phantom cell phone feelings where they feel their cell phone vibrating in their pocket when it's not even in their pocket, right? Because it's a people have become emotionally connected to them. And we also know, because there's a company called the Harris Corp, which sells these cell phone briefcase towers for law enforcement or corporate intelligence that essentially acts as a cell phone tower, because a cell phone is constantly pinging to make connection with a tower.
That's why you should not talk on one while you're driving.
So they make these things for law enforcement that are the size of a briefcase, and I think they have larger ones that get installed into cars that act as cell phone towers. So when you have one, a cell phone is trying to communicate with it, and that essentially can hack into your cell phone, know who you are, see all the information that's on your cell phone. You know, all these cell phones have unique identifiers, and the Harris Corp is selling these things like hotcakes to local law enforcement with Department of Homeland Security grant money. Now, the Harris Corp makes all, I mean, the Harris Corp, this sounds like a CIA front. They've been around forever. I talked to a guy that did some business with them and said that they are just as hardcore as they sound. And what they do is they make the local law enforcement sign these non-disclosure agreements so they cannot even, under a Sunshine Act, which would be a FOIA request, can't even provide information to citizens or attorneys from the ACLU or whoever else would file a FOIA request as to what these cell phone tower simulators are actually collecting. And they're everywhere. Seattle has these Wi-Fi hotspots that aren't actual Wi-Fi. It's like Wi-Fi in reverse, to where they can see, you know, who is in what part of town, know that cell phone information, and then potentially could use it to shut down, you know, Twitter or text messages if there was another battle in Seattle.
Well, I was just reading about that too this week about how
and not to mention there's also the UFED. Don't forget about that.
Very interesting.
The universal forensic extraction device that some police officers have that can download everything off your phone, can break your passwords, and retrieve information that you deleted. So all those Snapchat pictures.
So I heard a lawyer talking about this, and you know, this goes back to the this brings up 9/11 again, you know, how it's convenient how right around the time that 9/11 happened was right around the time everybody started to get a cell phone. Because, you know, you think of like pre 9/11, how many of your friends had cell phones? Probably just the rich ones, at least mine did. And then post 9/11, everyone started to have cell phones. Well, and, you know, it wasn't just the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act came here. You know, this lawyer was really smart. He was saying how everybody focuses on the Patriot Act. Like, oh, the Patriot Act this, Patriot Act this. He was saying the Patriot Act is nothing compared to all the
user agreements,
presidential, what do they call those?
Executive orders.
Executive things that get passed. You know, Bush had like 40 of them, and Obama's already had a good handful of them. Like, those are just like amendments to the Patriot Act that keep getting added. But basically what he was saying is how everything in the Constitution regarding your rights as a citizen of the United States of America, those laws written into the guaranteed to you in the Constitution, they don't apply to the cellular world. It's a whole different thing. So, and the way that companies got around it in the beginning was to, you know, it's like if you were on, even after the Patriot Act, like they still, you know, in 2002, they couldn't tap your phone. If you had like your grandma's like analog phone at home, they could easily store all your data from your cell phones. Because
you're saying they couldn't do it without a warrant.
Yeah, they couldn't do it without a warrant. But the way they did that is all the companies went digital. So you still got people out there that are like, you know, one in a million that's like, I don't have a cell phone because I just have a landline, man, you know, because it's that's the way to go. But if you have a landline, it's digital, and it's still not – it's still covered under the same laws that cell phones are.
Just like the Fourth Amendment says that you should be secure and private in your personal effects and papers and other things. It has nothing to do with text messages or JPEGs or, you know, documents that are contained on a digital device. The technology changes. Things try to catch up.
But, you know, it's like that NPR story. This guy, you know, the people that were arguing about it, they were getting red in the face. They were freaking out about how people are busy. People have lives. People need to be able to send emails. They need to be able to, you know, if you're on a plane, you know, you're bored or whatever, you need to be able to be on your phone. But it's like.
But I think some people like the cell phone bans on planes for the very reason that when you're on a plane, unless you're in first class, you're going to be in an uncomfortable seat. You're going to be in an uncomfortable situation because you've already had to go through security. You're on an airplane. It's no longer the friendly skies. It's already a terrible situation. And then having to deal with being in that close space with people who are strangers and having to listen to them argue, you know, with their, you know, significant other or whoever, their secretary, or get yelled at by their boss, or
some guy that was an ex-marshal was saying that that's one of the things that could be, you know, you could have some guy that, you know, sometimes domestic quarrels tend to bring out the worst in people. Well, this guy that was an ex-marshal was saying how, like, you could have a guy that could just be sitting there and receive a phone call that would make him just go to pieces and have to be tased right there on the plane. You know what I mean? And I was just thinking about how, like, I don't fly very much anymore. Not really hardly at all. When I was a kid, flew all the time. And it just seemed so easy. You get on the plane with your book or your magazine, and you get off. And remember, like...
Well, that's why some people say that they like the opportunity to have...
Remember the rush to go to the payphones? There'd be a line. Remember the lines by the payphones after a flight? You'd land, and there'd be all these people waiting in line to use the payphones. Hey, I'm here.
Yeah, there's no doubt things have changed. And there's no question that we live in a surveilled society now, and that we're all being watched, even if you don't have a cell phone. I mean, there are a million different ways to track you. Jimmy Carter, eat your heart out. I know Jimmy said last week that he doesn't trust electronic mail. He doesn't like digital communication. He still sends important letters via the post office.
They would never dare snoop into one of those.
As long as it has to have a forever stamp on it.
Oh, right, right. Must have that forever stamp. That's 17 minutes after the hour of one. This is the Paragon Radio Program, 816-931-5534. You'd like to remember the 1990s as well. As we sit in the middle of, I guess, the three-day Kurt Cobain murder-suicide tragedy.
Who was murdered?
He murdered himself, murder-suicide.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah, that's all I mean. It's just goofy. You figure a junkie would want to go out with the junk, not with the shoddy.
No, there's something about the Northwest.
It brings out the self-inflicted gunshot wound in people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just think about the old...
When I lived out in Portland, man, the people were like, oh, it's so depressing. It's going to be the middle of winter, and it's going to be so gray. You won't have seen the sun for months, and you have to take Prozac, and it's going to just be terrible. And then winter came, and I was like, the trees are still green. The grass is still growing. It's not below freezing. Where I come from, it becomes a desolate wasteland. Like, this last winter in Kansas City, everyone knows, because we've gotten used, and just like, this is springtime. How great is it? I normally don't like to spend a lot of time talking about the weather because it tends to be meaningless conversation. But we're actually having a spring. That means for gardeners out there, you get to grow cold weather crops.
Just like we had a fall.
Exactly. You have not been able to do that in Kansas City for some time unless you are a very adept gardener. It's not just throwing seeds in the ground because it's gotten so warm so quickly. And now we're actually having a cool spring. It's very pleasant. Very, very pleasant. That cold winter breaks you, really kills you. Come on, Kurt. Get through it, buddy. Green trees, little more, another shot of heroin. But that's just kind of the tragedy of it all. And, you know, I think Kurt Cobain is remembered as being an angsty, depressed junkie. But that's really not who he was. I mean, he was a very, you know, charismatic, you know, very, you know, comical individual. I mean,
well,
he wasn't.
He was moody.
Well, right. I mean, he's a musician. I mean, what singer, you know, songwriter, you know, guy that defined a movement of music is not going to have some moods to him. But
well,
he wasn't. It's not like he was some straight up emo kid the way that we would understand emo kids to be today. I mean, he wasn't that moody.
No.
You know, there are many sides to who he was as a person. And you have to wonder, would he have done the same thing to himself had there not been fame involved?
No. Well, the genius of the whole Nirvana thing for me, and I've been reading a lot of this, 20-year anniversary stuff. I think it's overlooked a lot. But I felt like, this is just me personally, that what Nirvana did, and I feel so lucky because it really affected the people who were my age. It was just like, you know, right then, you know, you're just getting into high school, you know, and here's Nirvana. And I remember that before Nirvana, it was really weird figuring out, you know, how kids do. You go to school and you try to figure out, you know, where you fit in. You know, you're like, well, I'm not a football player. And you're like, well, I'm not very smart. And then you're like, well, okay, I'm not one of these kill 'em all guys. You know, I'm not a tough guy, and my parents don't have any Harley Davidson tattoos. And you know, you're trying to figure out. I remember back then there was no place for just the kids, just the like frumpy, weirdo, ADD, soda drinking like kids who wore corduroys because they were hand-me-downs from their grandpa. Just like the geeks, you know what I mean? There was no outlet for geeks. There was like MC Hammer and Vanilla Ice and their ones. And then you had your Winger and your Poison and all this stuff. And you had your Michael Jackson and your Paula Abdul and your Debbie Gibson. You had all this stuff, but there was no place. And I remember like when Nirvana happened, it just was like, just like that. It just snapped. It just all of a sudden, all these kids with pimples and guts and Dr. Peppers were like, wow, I know where I belong now.
And by all these kids with pimples, guts, and Dr. Peppers, we're speaking specifically about a 13-year-old Jesse.
Speaking about every kid out there with, you know, Coke bottle glasses and, you know, different color Converse All-Stars, not because he was trying to make a fashion statement, but because the one fell apart and then he had to wear the other one.
I don't know that that's how I remember it. I would say that, I mean, truly what it was is that it represented a purification. Rock and roll had gotten so complicated in the 80s. And there was
no place for the common man. That's what I'm saying.
Well, everything had a label attached to
it. That's why it blew up. That's why it got so big, because that vacuum was so big. There were so many of those kids who were like, I don't know what I am, but I know I don't like Paula Abdul, and I know I don't like Metallica. I don't know who I am, though.
And now the kids have Insane Clown Posse.
That's old, man.
But, I mean, it's... The Juggalo convention is,
you know, now the
coming.
Kids have like the Lumineers.
Well,
you know, My Morning Jacket.
ICP smells like Teen Spirit at some level.
I'm totally joking.
Are you talking about the deodorant?
Teen Spirit.
I'm surprised they haven't made an energy drink yet.
Who?
Angst. Just call it Sweat.
Yeah. Angst or Teen Spirit.
Sweat and Angst.
Endorph.
Yeah.
Endorph, the energy drink.
We covered this already.
Oh, I guess I missed that one.
Made with real human endorphins. Endorph. With real human endorphins, bull testosterone, and 5,000 times your normal daily intake of caffeine.
And some, and
get,
probably some liquefied amphetamines in there would work too.
Not unless you buy it from Mexico to get the Mexican endorph.
Oh, yeah. I just thought of one, too.
You just thought of what?
Teen Spirit Energy Monster Drink with Ritalin.
Just to keep everyone in line?
But, you know, I was just having a conversation with someone. That's the thing that people... So many people overlook Nirvana. And again, The reason why this is so important
to me. I really
don't
think people overlook Nirvana.
No, they do, because when I've been talking to people about this all week, and people are like, yeah, I remember when Nirvana came out. Man, I really love Soundgarden, and I love Alice in Chains, and I love Pearl Jam. And I'm like, no. You're missing it. Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam and, Stone Temple Pilots, all those bands, Soundgarden, they have nothing to do with Nirvana. Those were tough guys. No, they were a different kind of tough guys, but that was like popular guy rock. All the popular kids were into
Scott
that stuff.
Scott Weiland was a tough guy.
Nirvana was that band. I mean, Stone Temple Pilots was from San Diego. They're from the San Diego suburbs. Like, Nirvana was literally three guys from a small, creepy, incestual town where everybody's parents was an alcoholic and a Vietnam vet and a chain smoker who went to swap meets and, you know, bingo and tricky trays. And it was just like that generation of kids that were just complete geeks. You know, you look at Soundgarden, you look at Alice, those guys weren't geeks. Those guys were cool. They always had model-looking women around them. The fact that people put that whole thing in a ball like it was the same thing, it wasn't. It all happened because of each other, but Nirvana was like the little guy's band. It literally, they were not rolling around in limos with, you know, Bud Light girls, you know, like Alice in Chains and Soundgarden with wet hair and no shirt on and, you know, greased bodies. That was totally different. Nirvana was the voice of, you know, the Ritalin generation, really. You know, all those kids that grew up, you know, unidentified to anything. They just knew, they didn't know George Bush was president. You know, the whole world was weird back then. I mean, there really was. You think about what 1990 was like. We take it for granted now because there's so many outlets, you know, for people's different tastes. Back then, everything was kind of one collective taste. It was called the Billboard Top 10. You know, it was like the fact that Garth Brooks and Tony.
Tony.
And, you know, and like Debbie Gibson and
Tony.
And, you know, Guns N' Roses and Michael Bolton were all in the top 10 at the same time. That's crazy, because I look at the top 10 every week now, and all it ever is Justin Bieber and Jay-Z and Miley Cyrus. I mean, it's just like, it's not like it was. It was so, you know, I remember back then you'd look at that, and it was still garbage then, but at least it was a variety of garbage, whereas now it just seems to all be the same kind of
same
shade of garbage,
type of garbage. All right, well, I think we've talked sufficiently about Nirvana.
We're done.
I think we've talked sufficiently about the early 90s as well, because clearly nobody cares. 816-931-5534. It's been 20 years, folks.
20 years.
And nobody really cares at all. But I think, you know, looking forward, music, it's out there. It's just never going to be like it was. And that's okay. Because Nirvana, more than anything else, made David Geffen a lot of money, right?
Well, and you saw Corporate FM. I mean, right after Nirvana happened, that was like they got down to business. It's kind of like how you heard the old Hunter Thompson quote, how like after he almost won sheriff, the first thing the new sheriff did was get down to business with the local legislators, making sure that a guy like Thompson could never run again. That's exactly what they did after Nirvana. Like, they were going to make sure that three punk asses from BFE were not going to show up out of nowhere and do that again. I mean, it was definitely a controlled demolition of the industry. It's very controlled.
Good morning. You're on the radio.
Yeah, boy, it's Uncle Fester.
Hey, buddy, I need to talk to you.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Hey, I want to say something about this whole Kurt Cobain thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think, you know, you want to talk about people that, you know, really changed the face of rock and roll. Let's talk a little Joey Ramone, baby. Because you want to talk about a musical wasteland and somebody that really changed the musical landscape when rock and roll was totally lame.
You're right.
You know, the early 70s, are you kidding me? Arena bands, let me think, REO Speedwagon, Kansas.
You know what the best thing about Joey Ramone?
And the Ramones came out, and they were like, hey, check this out. Here's some three-chord rock and roll.
Yeah, and you know why Joey Ramone is the man? Because he said back then, I was just reading about this too, how Joey Ramone said they would only play 30-minute sets, and they would play like 40 songs in 30 minutes, and then they'd be like, "Good night, folks," and then they'd be like, "Well, how come you only play for 30 minutes?" And Joey Ramone would be like, "Well, people have stuff to do. I mean, we're not trying to like take up people's day. Like, we're just, you know, 30 minutes, 40 songs, we're out. Like, we're not trying to take up people's day."
I got to tell you, I'm a big Ramones fan. I really am, man. I mean, they just, you know, I don't think they get nearly enough credit. I mean, you know, they never got any airplay. They never got any, you know, and I don't think they really wanted it. But, and, you know, I heard a story about the Ramones. I don't know if it's true, but I remember hearing that none of them were really musicians, that they were just so fed up with the state of rock and roll that they all decided to learn, you know, because rock and roll was so damn lame. I don't know if there's any truth to that or not, but it wouldn't surprise me. But
you would not have Nirvana or Kurt Cobain without the Ramones. I mean, those guys, when Kurt Cobain was a little kid, he saw the Ramones on TV and was like, "That's what I want to do."
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and I mean, you know, still to this day, I mean, Green Day does a pretty fair imitation of the Ramones. Well, actually, Green Day completely rips off the Ramones, but, you know, that's, I think a lot of the grunge rock movement really ripped off the Ramones, to tell you the truth. I mean, they're probably,
did they rip it off, or did they pay homage
in the history
to
of rock and roll?
No, that's a good point. Do they rip it off? They pay homage to it. I mean, you got to build upon what came before and use that to do something new. I think you could make an argument that was done.
I think that's probably true. I think that's probably true. You know, but I mean, it just, you know, they just took it back to real simple. You know, let's keep it simple. Simple lyrics. Simple. You know, and I'm not a big lyric guy. I'm a big beat, you know, bass and drum guy.
I hear you.
They're like, "Hey, here's some 3-chord rock and roll. We're going to beat the hell out of the drums and lay down a nice bass line, and you know, it's all good."
You know, I'm always arguing with these guys. These old, you know, Kansas City's full of these old jazz heads that are, you know, try to make you sit down and listen to the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, or whatever, Doostiff. But, you know, as you know, the biggest impacts in music ever has always been the most simple stuff. Elvis. When you listen to that first Elvis record, it was so simple. The Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
The Beatles was so simple.
I got Elvis in my CD case, man. I was just rocking out to Burning Love the other day, one of the greatest rock and roll songs ever. I mean, how can you not like that song?
Exactly. The Ramones, when they came out, Nirvana, like all the biggest, not even necessarily the biggest bands, but the bands that had the biggest impact on society and culture were always the bands that were just really short, 3-minute songs. Nobody wants to hear a 7-minute song.
Look, you got bands like Pink Floyd, and, you know, those are the kind of band. And look, I'm not taking anything away from Pink Floyd. Great band, but I always found them kind of depressing. I mean, I sit down and listen to Pink Floyd. I listen to Dark Side of the Moon. I want to pull out a gun and blow my brains out, you know? I mean, I got to have something a little more.
God, don't listen to Animals, then.
Yeah, don't put Animals on.
You know, it's just not my thing, man. I mean, I'd rather listen to, at least, Yes, you know, a little, kind of the flip side of Pink Floyd, a little more upbeat, you know, but I mean, I know these people that are into rock and roll, and they're like, it's all the lyrics. It's like, oh, you know, screw the music, but did you hear what they said? You know, do you hear what they're saying? And it's like, who cares?
Yeah, I don't like the Dead Kennedys either, man.
But, you know, I mean, the Ramones, I mean, stuff like, you know, the KKK Took My Baby Away, you know, and you know, Gimme Shock Treatment. You know, just pure genius, man, just absolute pure genius, and they don't get enough credit. But,
you'd be surprised. I mean, it's funny to me. Every now and again, I see a 12-year-old with a Ramones shirt on, and I'm like, "Where did you get that?" And they're like, "Target."
Target. Yeah, Target. All right, Fester.
The Spirit Lives, man. Yeah, and I've been meaning to for a while. They've got their fan store. I want to get, you know, I want to put on my jeans. You know, I'm 55 years old. Get the T-shirt, and a nice pair of ripped jeans. You know, a nice pair of button-up Levi's with, you know, a rip in them, and get the, you know, the T-shirt with a. What is it? Where they got the baseball bat in one hand and the, you know, the takeoff on the American logo. They've got all the stuff there on their website.
Well, you know, Uncle Fester, you said the Ramones. You forgot, you know, before the Ramones, what about the Stooges?
You know, I've never really gotten into that band. I'll have to check them out.
I'll tell you,
a band I really liked a lot was X.
No, I don't know them.
Oh, yeah, the punk band from L.A., Exene Cervenka, and DJ Bonebreak, Billy Zoom. You never heard of those guys?
Not off the doesn't ring a bell.
Oh, man, you have to check them out. You have to check them out. They were one of the original punk bands from L.A. I never considered the Ramones a punk band. The Ramones are just a rock and roll band to me. People say, oh, they were the pioneers of punk. Nah, not really. They're just a good, solid rock and roll band, man. But, hey, check this out. You guys were talking about the cell phones and all that stuff. But, you know, they make a thing you can put your cell phone in and wallets, by the way, that are RFID-proof. In other words, you can do stuff with your cell phone, throw it in your little RFID-proof cell phone case, and it will neither receive, can't be tracked, can't be traced. Basically, once you put it in the case, the cell phone doesn't exist.
Well, as long as, I mean, it's Wi-Fi is really how they get you, as far as the data transfer is concerned, because your phone's always looking for a high-speed broadband internet connection.
When I was driving a cab a long time ago, I heard these guys, I was taking them to the embassy suites on the plaza, and they were talking about 666. And nothing to do with, and I was just starting to get into this stuff. This was years and years ago, and they weren't talking anything about the Bible. They were computer programmers. And before they got out of the cab, I said, "What's the deal with 666?" And they said, "Well, that's the number that computer programmers use to get a set of numbers that go to infinity."
Hmm.
And I said, "Really?" And I've come to find out that in the barcodes they use that 666 number. That's in every barcode on everything that you buy that goes through a scanner, because that's a set of numbers that they use to, like I said, get a series of numbers that go to infinity. So that's a big part of a number set that they use in computer programming.
That sounds beastly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like my uncle used to say: if you're gonna, you know, nowadays if you're gonna go dump a body, always leave your phone at home. That's the best way to not get traced. Good advice from Jesse's uncle.
You want to talk to me, man? What's on your mind?
Oh, we'll talk. We'll have to. Do you have the email for the show? You should email the show. Paragon
Radio.
I could email
you some apocalypse updates, man, as I get them coming in, because I'm really on top of that kind of thing.
We'll look forward to that, Uncle Fester. It's good to talk to you, man. We'll do it again.
All right, brother.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Sound!
All right, we're back. 20 minutes until the 2 o'clock hour, 816-931-5534. That's 931-KKFI. And we are going to talk about other things now. Well, like secret devices that the Oakland deputies use to track cell phones. Oakland County, Michigan, deputies. Because everything's integrated.
Right. I go far more conspiratorial than most. I think
we know that about you, Jake. That's right. That's why we like you.
The telephone was invented for the purposes with which people think that it's being used nefariously. The metadata is the point on some level. There are the culture creators, the society pilots. They're not spying on you, or they don't want to know what you have to say to Jesse per se. They want to know what you have to say to everybody and what all your contacts have to say to everybody. They track that metadata for things like 9/11 or wars on terror or advertising campaigns. So there's no box that keeps your cell phone safe. The second you get it out of the box, it's recorded everything that's in there, just like, you know, Facebook and Google.
I've been told several times by people that know that even if you have a burner, the prepaid wireless phone, you make 3 phone calls on one of those and they know who you are and where you are.
Exactly. The telephony system itself was set up to track things like this. It's not, no one's safe, and yet they're not specifically looking for individual, you know, stuff per se, unless they have to blackmail or you know, plant evidence or whatever. But this is the same with the computer. Your modem tracks everything you do, even if you're on a Tor network with an anonymous IP with 3 kinds of, you know, security software. Your modem tracks every bit of that. Verizon or Charter or Time Warner, through the modem is the tracking device. Now Facebook and Google, they do keep your information and sell it to companies, and there are third party, you know, pieces of nonsense that are affiliated with this. But the modem itself tracks everything you do, no matter how anonymous you think you are. Your cell phone inside that case may not be communicating with that tower, but the second you take it out, it's everything you did was recorded on there and has been uploaded. So, you know, the notion of a way to beat this, there isn't, unless, like Jesse said, you ride your horse to Nevada and whisper in someone's ear. But if you're using this technology, they're tracking you with it. That's the point of it.
And there's no going back from this. And when you have something like the Harris Corporation developing, they're called Stingrays.
Oh, those drone buster drones?
No, it's not a drone buster drone. It's the cell phone tower thing.
Oh, right.
There's 2 names for them. There's a Stingray, which I think is like the handheld device. $170,000. So the Stingray is the smaller one. The Hailstorm is the larger one. Florida-based defense contract, the Harris Corp, is believed to be the Hailstorm. It's called a Hailstorm. An upgrade. I mean, that sounds like a German neo-Nazi band.
Right.
I think it is, actually. An upgrade of the Stingray, a suitcase-sized contraption that is installed in cars and used to trick nearby cell phones into connecting and providing data to police. I mean, that would seem to be maybe the general idea behind the smartphone to begin with. Like you were saying, put all that information on there. Digital prints. It's, you can't even format a hard drive on your computer without the FBI being able to reverse that format and get all the pictures of, you know, the child porn you got from your local parish priest.
Correct. And the good news is, is not to be afraid of it, because like, excuse me, with the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain is a small little dude. They're not going to come after you for what you're doing unless you're mounting some kind of offensive or something. But
what about, I mean, you know, the irony, of course, we're having this conversation, and because the webcam is down again, Jake is actually on his cell phone right now.
Right. looking at. But see, and that's what I'm saying.
So there's not just. But then
are you downloading a Groupon?
There's not just the surveillance aspect of it as to being one of maybe the negative side effects of having a phone in your pocket. But there's also the emotional aspect of it, where people need to have that thing. And the way it's changed children.
Yeah.
I mean, it really has. It's pretty amazing. Right. It's made everyone kind of dependent upon this technology, where if you see people in public, that's the first thing. That's the go-to thing. It's a comfort thing. It's like sucking on your thumb. You know, I mean, it's the exact same.
It's like when we were kids, we had, you know, what did we have? General Mills?
Did we?
Not at Jake's house. They had, what was the knockoff brand that was on the very bottom shelf of cereal aisle and came in a plastic bag and not a box?
Yeah, Toastios.
There you go. That's what Jake had at his house.
More yellow than a school bus.
Toastios and milk cut with water.
But yeah, so, you know, with great responsibility, with great freedom, with this massive technology, yes, they are tracking it, but for the metadata, I say, use it for beneficial purposes, send messages of love, research things of knowledge and aspiration, figure out how to crack the free energy paradigm, share, you know, things, excuse me, inspiration and uplift with people. And at some point, you know, that will catch fire virally. You know, it doesn't have to be hate and worry and fear and Alex Jones and where's the next war. You know, let's somebody figure out a magnetic generator.
And this is kind of the key to the future, because we can talk about all these revolutions. We can occupy our local parks department. We can have our tea parties. We can talk about revolution all we want. But what needs to happen before that is an evolution. And we're to the point now where all this technology that's available to us and the standard of living that we have achieved here in America, which is unprecedented and pretty amazing, so much so, our standard of living is so high that we can sit around and commiserate about everything, which is great. I mean, this is a wonderful advancement in human society. I say that even though everything I say sounds sarcastic, I'm being totally genuine here. The next step, what people need to look forward to, is a spiritual evolution, and that is tapping in and realizing that beyond this interconnectivity through digital networks and cell phone towers and all these other things, that is truly the distraction from the true connectivity that you have by just being a part of this, participating within the life experience. It's out there. You need to listen to it. And the distractions
being in touch with nature. I think all this stuff disconnects us from nature.
Not so much being in touch with nature as much as it's being in touch with the natural, you know, state of human beings.
Right.
I don't mean that in a negative way. I'd like to qualify that positively. As opposed to, you could look at the natural state of human beings as maybe being, you know, a bread riot in Haiti. I mean, that might be an accurate natural state of affairs for human beings, but we need to make the next step. We need to bridge that space.
Right, and don't be afraid to learn and evolve, because it took me several years of being on Facebook to really appreciate actual relationships. You know, friend request in person, how much, you know, more satisfying that is than, you know, tapping a button on a computer. Though those aren't worthless, they do, you know, bring positive connections. But, you know, at the same time, Marshall McLuhan once said that human beings may be the genitals of the machine world. And we just got, you know, we need to practice safe sex in the machine world, if that makes any sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not the machines so much as it's us. You know, I think you talked about this a long, long time ago, Ben, but it was like they did some kind of study a while back, and they tracked a bunch of different countries, and they wanted to see what people use the internet for around the world. And in America, they figured out that, like,
Amazon,
80% of Americans use the internet. The number one thing they use the internet for is consumption. looking at what you're going to buy, buying stuff, and more so than gathering information. And it seems like it has to be incorrect because you always are reading news stories and stuff. But, you know, the majority of people that go on the internet are looking to purchase something or get something as opposed to learn. I mean, there's two reasons you can go on the internet, or three reasons. I mean, one is because you need to, you know, get yourself ready for bed, or, you know, or you need to purchase something, or you need to learn something, you know. So I just think, you know, definitely. Have you noticed that the one here's, you know, we talk about all the negative aspects of technology. Well, let's talk about the, you know, one positive thing that, you know, is great. You notice how, you know, BSers can't really thrive as much anymore. You know, some guy's sitting there talking, and you know he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. And you're like, right, hey, keep talking, buddy. And you're like,
Google it real quick.
Well, I got it pulled up right here, and it basically says that you're completely wrong. What you're saying is absolutely wrong.
That was one of my initial loves about the internet, is being able to get in arguments with people and just go shut them down with something definitive and authoritative that was not an Encyclopedia Britannica.
Because those are heavy and not very pocket worthy.
And hardly had, and that's, you know, that's why something like Wikipedia is so powerful. I mean, how many entries does Wikipedia have that you would find in a traditional encyclopedia? And then how many does it have that you would never find in an encyclopedia? It's a powerful thing, there's no doubt. But it's like this information and the consumption, and most of it is just flash and entertainment and fast moving shiny images, pretty stuff that gets people's attentions. The interconnectivity that what was accomplished in Tahrir Square in Egypt with Twitter and Facebook, ironically enough, in regards to their revolution, which was a failure, but most revolutions tend to be, that's pretty powerful. That presents something that you can really do and accomplish something with the internet by being connected with people. But it's kind of, it's a distraction or a trick, because we have the opportunity now, because of our standard of living in this country, to increase that level of interconnectivity on a spiritual plane with people, completely devoid of all things but just yourself. You don't need these intermediaries. And it's where the technology may have shown us the possibilities. It's a matter of people taking that, doing something.
Well, that's why I think in this country, we're always, despite what people say, all these doom and gloom naysayers about the, getting your canned goods and your water. Like, I think that they're going to keep us living on the high hog for as long as they possibly can, because as long as we can go to the movies and go to McDonald's and go to Costco and go do all the stuff that, you know, people do around town, you're not going to have an Egypt thing happen. And it's just like the old thing that, you know,
the poor are not going to rise up if they, you know, have an issue with their diabetic socks.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about, Jake. I mean, we live in a country
have diabetic socks.
We live in a country here where if 50 to 100 people go and decide that they're going to occupy a park to protest, you know, banks being bailed out with taxpayer money, they're dirty, you know, Obama supporting, you know, liberal hippies or whatever. But if 50 people camp out in front of a Best Buy for a week for a new Nintendo Wii, then they're just good American consumers, you know, doing their, you know, American
economic stimulation,
which is funny because it's like, you know, I mean, the shams that have been pulled just in the last 10 years, you know, like the stuff that they've done, by they, I mean, the power structure of America, corporate America, the things that they've managed to get through in the last 10 years, if the same stuff had happened 30 years ago, it would have went completely under the radar, undetected. I mean, now it's like, I mean, did you include tonight, Jake, in the suicide, anything about the new findings about the Malaysian plane?
I didn't. I'm sick of it. I don't care.
I was sick of it till I read about that guy. Diego Garcia.
It's an island.
You mean the guy that supposedly sent a picture from his iPhone of a prison cell?
Philip Wood.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
I
real.
Thought Philip Wood was the name of the island.
No.
But I had it backwards.
That's the summer camp on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that's a real story. People have already said that the photograph has digital markings, that it was photoshopped. It's not the type of picture you would expect to find from an iPhone. And how does a guy in prison, and where did he put the iPhone? Did he stick it up his woo-woo and then pull it out?
No,
take
he works,
pictures? And then how do you upload? I mean, did he get cell service on this island?
He said, I have been held hostage by unknown military personnel after my flight was hijacked. I work for IBM, and I have managed to hide my cell phone.
That's 17 layers of intelligence. Mind effery right in that little bit you just said.
And then he was able to post image without using his fingers, from what I understand.
Do you think IBM paid for that shout-out?
I don't trust IBM. I don't trust Apple. I don't trust Malaysia. I don't trust Malaysian Airlines. It just all sounds
didn't IBM
like chicanery.
Help the Nazis keep track of the concentration camps?
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Hollow Earth punch cards did, but yes, International Business Machines did get their funding through. The Nazis were their first big, no bid contract.
You're right. It's a bogus story. I mean, you got to think that if a military operation was able to make a plane disappear and put like 250 passengers in jail, they would have found the guy's cell phone in his butt. I mean, you got to think that, you know, or on his person somewhere.
You figured they might have swept the, you know, room for bugs.
Mm-hmm.
You would think. I'm going to go with Sarah Palin on this one. I think the plane went to heaven.
Right.
I'm good with that.
Raptured.
That explanation is just fine. Or maybe it's like a Stephen King thing.
So there's another story this week about another bushy-haired stranger opening fire on, a crowd of innocent military personnel.
Are military personnel innocent?
Or dead. That one?
If they're in the National Guard, right?
No, that's an amazing thing that you can't, on a military base, like, are you making a click sound? Is that you playing with stuff over there? On a military base, kid, he's like a little kid. On a military base like Fort Hood, which has got, I mean, Fort Hood is a small town. It's like 40,000 people live there. It's military personnel. These guys are trained to be murderers. I mean, this is what the military does. Defenders of the Constitution.
Yeah,
trained killers. I mean, everyone knows that you go to boot camp, you learn how to kill. You learn how to do something that you've been told your whole life that is wrong, murder. And you learn how to do it with trained precision. But you can't carry guns on a military base. Why is that? Because it's a little tense there.
Well, then what would make the MP special, right?
I think there's a little bit of irony in this.
Extra dose of gravy.
That we train kids to be, you know, killers for the purpose of defending. We all know what they defend.
And I don't know a lot about it, but it just seems to me, you know.
And this guy's totally mentally unstable. He's been in the Army for, well, he's dead now. He was in the Army for 6 years. He never saw combat. He was reaching out for psychological help from the Army. They had started that process. And, you know, he asked for leave. He needed some personal time. He needed a little PT time.
R&R.
And he lashed out. Now, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there.
He got in an altercation with some of his fellow servicemen.
One hell of an altercation, right? And it's unfortunate that American military personnel can't feel safe on their bases.